You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back into another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. Sounding pretty different so far today. I am Steven Serta, not Pete Sweeney. Pete is taking some much needed vacation time this week ahead of next week's free agency period and all the craziness that comes with that as we move ever closer towards the NFL draft. And hopefully we see the Kansas City Chiefs make some significant moves. But still joining me today, as always, the executive editor of ArrowheadPride.com, John Dixon. John, we got a lot to talk about on today's show. I don't think it's going to be quite as long as it normally is, but you put together all the news. We got all the highlights. We got all the Chiefs stuff that everybody's talking about. We're going to go through all of it today.
Yeah, it could be a little shorter, but you never know about these things. Often we say it's going to be a short show, and then we're pushing an hour, 10 minutes, and Pete's going crazy. So you know how those things go. The main thing I'm worried about today is what if my dogs start barking again like they did last week, and then your dog starts barking when he hears those dogs? You know, it could just go crazy. So just be prepared for that to take place.
Yeah, normally I'm just kind of sitting in the background, so you don't got to worry. But she's sleeping right now. Lily's right behind me, so hopefully
so are mine. So yeah, okay.
Hopefully we'll be all right. We got plenty to get into. But before we do that, John, I have to just ask your advice on something because I haven't spoken to you about this, but you're well aware of like what a movie, like pop culture person I am, at least just like from what Pete has talked about on this very show. So I went and saw Dune Part 2 3 times this past weekend.
Oh dear.
Now, and I am a huge fan of the book series. I read it when I was younger, and it has been a huge part of my life and like my personality and the things that I love as an adult. And so I was very excited for this. It's an incredible movie. Now I'm rereading the book because I can't stop thinking about it. I'll probably go see the movie a couple of more times. And it's becoming this obsession to the point where like it's hard for me to even like pay attention to what's going on in the NFL right now because I can't stop thinking about Dune.
Well, that is a problem. Just as long as you're not suggesting that we take an actor from the movie and trade for, you know, one of our players, I think it'll be okay. I think you're entitled to have a movie life aside from an NFL life. I know I do. We've been watching Academy Awards movies, as we always do at this time of year. It used to be hard. We used to have to go to the movie theaters a lot, but now we can catch most of them online. Sometimes we're having to pay $20 to buy them, but that's still cheaper than going to the movies. But we've seen quite a few. We started one last night that we realized was a horror movie. We said, no, we don't care.
What movie was it?
It's the last voyage of the Demeter or something like that. Yeah. It looks kind of interesting to start with. And then we realized, oh, this is a horror movie.
Yeah,
and we're just not into those. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like that and that's fine. I have no particular principle against them. I just don't like them. So there.
So,
but it's always great to have a franchise in your life that you love. And I think that's really cool that, you know, you've got this. I mean, did you see the original film with David Bowie years ago? Or is this one of those deals where you're no?
Well, so the David Bowie shot in that one, but it was directed by a guy named David Lynch in 1984.
Oh, I'm getting all confused, aren't I?
There's some other thing. I think David Bowie's in like Labyrinth, which is kind of not that.
That's right. Like, yeah,
I could see where the confusion would come in there. The 1984 one's not very good. It's not.
Yeah, I think I started to watch that one time because I'd heard people talking about it so much. And then I'm like, what's this about?
Yeah.
So, and we had actually started to watch the first Dune movie. And it was pretty good. And I think there, for some reason, we had to go someplace or something. We never went back to it. So we'd started to watch it, and it was pretty impressive, I thought.
Well, you should definitely check it out. If you're not going to go to a theater, I suggest you wait to watch the first one until you can watch the second one accompanied
right.
with it, because it's really just one long movie.
Right.
It's amazing.
You don't want to be like,
especially when you put them together.
You don't want to be like my ex-in-laws who went to the fourth Star Wars movie and said, did we miss something?
Yeah. Yes. And Dune is very complicated. There's lots of moving parts, but okay. We're 5 minutes into the show, and I just wanted to get that off my chest, because I hope that Pete listens to this while he's on vacation and gets annoyed with me because I suck some Dune talk into the Arrowhead. But, before we dive into the news, let's get to our reviews. As always, want to remind you guys to subscribe, rate, and review everything that we're doing right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. We got plenty of stuff coming out to keep you guys caught up on all the news, draft coverage, free agency, everything. Got you covered on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, as well as arrowheadpride.com. But our latest review is from Ash and Andy. Best Chiefs podcast out there. I've been listening since the Todd Haley, Matt Castle days, and the podcast has only gotten better each year. AP editor show, is this the year the Chiefs start looking to draft Kelce's replacement in either a wide receiver or a tight end? 87 still has some years left, but it would be good to see Kelce train up a good prospect. So the first part, I don't think it's possible for you to have been listening to us. It's not Haley of Matt Castle days, but John, any thoughts on this? Obviously Travis Kelce getting up there in age, Jason Kelce retiring, like it's coming to the end of the line at some point here for Travis Kelce, and it's never too early to start planning for the future.
Well, I think that Noah Gray has been a lot better than people realize. You know, he's basically performing as any tight end one would in any other team in the league, but that's not quite up with Kelce. The question is, what happens if Kelce isn't there? We really don't know too much about that. What, there's been like one game in the last two or three seasons where Kelce was out, and, you know, we don't really have much of a clue what it looks like without Kelce yet. But I do agree that, you know, this is an offense that depends on a tight end. And I think the Chiefs are going to want to find some way to, you know, have somebody in the pipeline when it's time for Kelce to move on. I think he's going to be back this year. You know, he was very emotional when his brother retired on Monday, I guess it was. And, So there's still a possibility that he might hang it up after this year, but I think we still got a year or two at least.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree. You know, maybe if the Chiefs somehow do pull off the first three-peat in NFL history, maybe that's enough for him to say, okay, I did it.
Yeah.
I accomplished everything and set NFL history, and I'm going to ride off into the sunset. But hopefully that's not coming up anytime soon. And I also think that last year's draft class would have been a good time to draft a tight end based on the returns from the rookies this season in that group. This year's tight end class, not quite as talented. So maybe not a great group of guys to try to target a Travis Kelce replacement, but this is certainly a deep wide receiver class. And I hope to see the Chiefs attack that position here in the upcoming NFL draft. Last review from St. John Fam, marvelous marinated takeaways. Hey guys, I am just one of the, I'm sure, many Chiefs Kingdom female fans who love AP. Thank you for always providing pithy and almost always positive info on all things Chiefs. Pete, I have to say that all of this past season, you kept my Super Bowl hopes alive, and just look at how that turned out. Way to help us keep the faith, Jill. So We've seen this a lot on the editor show when going through reviews, John. Like, people seem to really think that Pete was the only positive person that believed the Kansas City Chiefs could win the Super Bowl this past season. Now,
yeah, I think there was more than one.
Yeah, I mean, now if you want to say it wasn't me, I'm totally fine with that, because there were some weeks in there down the back half of the season where I was like, they do not have it. Like, this is not a good enough team. But I was at least positive about the defense all year, but I do appreciate that Arrowhead Pride is like, Pete's the only guy who believed. Pete is the guy that they have propped up ahead of everyone else.
Well, I get a lot of flack from people because I'm always so positive about the team, but I can't help it. You know, I've been a fan for a long time. I work hard to be fair, you know, and recognize the faults of the team when they exist. But I never have been willing to deny that I'm a fan, because I am. And I feel that that's what people really want to hear, is somebody who has as much passion for their team as they do. So I don't apologize for it.
Yeah. And I don't think you should. Like, there's plenty of different ways to analyze football, and
sure,
you can find that wherever you want. And that's why we try to have so many different kinds of options for you. Absolutely. Right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. So as always, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. We will get to them right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. But John, do actually have quite a bit of news to get into today as we approach free agency coming off the NFL Combine. A lot of things to get caught up on, and we'll start with Chiefs head coach Andy Reid was asked about center Creed Humphrey and his low snaps, which that popped up in the Super Bowl. It's something that popped up all last season, basically, like something that just, I don't know if it's a weird thing that Creed just developed or if it's something that he's really always had issues with, but it did stand out a lot of times last year where he was snapping the ball really low repeatedly, and Patrick Mahomes kind of had to, you know, make a move to grab the football just at the snap, and it kind of slows the plays up.
Yeah, I get why people are concerned about this, but the thing that I keep wondering about is whether this is a deliberate coaching tactic that they've coached him to if you're going to make a mistake low, you know, rather than make a mistake high where the ball might go over Mahomes' head. And Mahomes has actually been pretty good at fielding these low snaps, digging them up off the ground and actually making plays once he's done so. So I'm not really sure it's a big deal, but I sure understand why people are concerned about it, because it always looks bad when the ball is close to the ground on the snap. But so far it hasn't been a big problem, and hopefully it won't ever be.
Yeah, it's not great, but obviously they still won a Super Bowl. I would have to imagine he's going to work on that this offseason.
Sure.
Hopefully get it fixed, because, you know, as far as blocking goes, Creed is very good at his job. And he's a player who's probably coming up for an extension at some point for the Kansas City Chiefs, and probably going to be their center, I think, for the foreseeable future, just based on how he's played his first few years in the league.
Yeah, we actually might even see an extension for Humphrey this season, because his salary has gone up $3.5 million with the NFLPA. What do they call it? The raises players get in their fourth year of their contract. He's actually a big winner in that. It totaled $11 million, but Humphrey got $3.5 million of it. So he's all of a sudden got a bigger cap hit than he had before, and they might be wanting to give him a new contract just to get control of that situation in the coming year. But we'll see. Well, it depends on a lot of other things, as we'll get to here in the show.
Yeah. If Andy Reid's not too concerned about it, I'm not too concerned.
Right.
Especially with the way this Chiefs staff has kind of coached up offensive linemen over the years. You figure they're going to get that figured out. Like, just get a little higher, Creed. Like, just get a little higher. We won't have any problems. We won't have Patrick Mahomes yelling at Rashee Rice on the sideline in the Super Bowl because he didn't have time to throw a touchdown to him. So next thing, Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs gave away their team awards for the season. Patrick Mahomes wins team MVP, the Derek Thomas Award. Rashee Rice wins the Mackley Hill Rookie of the Year Award. And can't say I really have any issues with it. I think both those guys deserve those awards this season for the Chiefs.
Once in a while, these are a surprise. I remember when, what was his name? Former New York Jets safety, Mark something. Anyway, he was the MVP one year, and I was really surprised. It was a former Giants player, now that I think about it. And of course, I'm too old, and it's been 20 years ago. I don't remember. But sometimes these players are a surprise, but this is certainly a case when they were not. Anybody would have picked Mahomes and Rice for these awards, and congratulations to both of them.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty easy decision for the Chiefs this year. What Rashee Rice did, especially down the back half of the season, like all the times that I was doubtful about the Chiefs winning a Super Bowl, like it was before he really turned it on and became a focal point of the offense.
Well, he hardly played for like the first 4 weeks of the season and came very close to setting a franchise record for yards for a rookie. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about how good he was in this last season.
There was, I think it was late season, like week 15 against the Patriots. I think that was rock bottom for me on the Chiefs regular season in a win against the three-win Patriots team. So it only got better after that. And, you know, Shearer was obviously a massive part of another Chiefs championship. Mecole Hardman, John, this was a little frustrating, and I feel like people made a bigger deal out of it than probably they needed to, but it's obviously something that we have to pay attention to. Mecole Hardman joined the Pivot podcast and kind of talked about his time with the Jets, and you know, he signs as a free agent there in the offseason, and then by the time he's traded to the Kansas City Chiefs, he's a healthy and active player, like not getting any snaps, not getting on the field, and talked about how, you know, his frustration and like everything was built around Aaron Rodgers and he made all the decisions and like they wanted his guys on the field because the Jets also did that. They brought in several former Aaron Rodgers teammates to try to load up that offense, and it totally blew up in their faces this season. But then he mentioned like he kind of had told, you know, texted some players on the Chiefs and said like, come get me. And now all of a sudden, the red flags are raised and people are like, oh, this is tampering, as if the Jets care. The Jets are just pretending like they care, in my opinion. Like, they're just pretending that they're upset about all of this because the Chiefs won a Super Bowl and Mecole Hardman caught the game-winning touchdown. Like, I don't think anything's going to come of this, but also with the Kansas City Chiefs, we saw them lose a draft pick over the Jeremy Maclin stuff. So you can't take the tampering allegations very lightly. I just don't think that this is something serious that where anything like major is going to come out of it.
Well, it's certainly a lot less serious. If it ends up being a problem, it's going to be a lot smaller problem than it was with Maclin, because the Chiefs had initiated that contact. You know, it seemed silly to us at the time, but that's a definite no-no. Now, in this particular case, the way Hardman described it, it sounded as if he had initiated contact, and you said that he texted it, which isn't exactly what he said, but a young player now might say, I talked to somebody, when in fact they had sent a text. And in my mind, I'm thinking, if Mecole Hardman sent a text to Brett Veach that says, you know, get me back, and sent a text to Patrick Mahomes that said, hey, get me back. You know, players and GMs can't control what texts they get from former players. But it turns out that if something like that is happened, teams are supposed to report those contacts, so there's no question later about it. So, you know, if the league investigates it, that's going to be one of the things they're going to be looking at. Did the Chiefs actually report this as they should have, or as they're supposed to do? And exactly what were those communications? As you note, this is something that the league takes too seriously, and the Chiefs have been penalized for it in the past. So we can hope that they did everything they were supposed to do and nothing will come of it. But and then, of course, there's the additional issue that players were accusing Hardman of sending the team's plays to the Eagles and to the Chiefs. Through players, former University of Georgia players like Hardman. But of course, the Jets played two of their best games against those two teams this season, winning one of them. So, you know, if it turned out to be something that Hardman did, it didn't seem to have much of an effect. I personally think that is just sour grapes. The other one, there may be some meat on those bones, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. So far, several outlets have questioned the NFL about it, but the NFL has not admitted that they're doing any kind of investigating, but we'll find out sooner or later, I expect.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. And I would think that, you know, we see how careful the Chiefs are about and everything. Like, I remember like early in the season, there was the thing with the Falcons and rookie running back Bijan Robinson. Like, he popped up with migraines before the game or something, and so they just didn't list him on the injury report or anything, just didn't play him. And there was like a whole thing across fantasy football in the NFL over that. And then all of a sudden every week it was like Chiefs injury report was 15 players long. and it was listing every single thing. So I feel they got the memo, like, don't mess around with the injury reports. And we see this over and over again with the Chiefs. Like, they're pretty big sticklers for the rules at this point with Andy Reid. So we'll keep an eye on it, see if anything comes of it. I think a lot of it just kind of, like you mentioned, John, it just kind of seems like sour grapes that, like, a player that you didn't deem was talented enough to get on the field for you, like, went and won a Super Bowl and had an impact with another team. So we'll keep an eye on that, but I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Chiefs hero, living legend here in Kansas City, Nick Allegretti, is looking for a starting job this offseason. And I don't blame him, John. He's a guy that the Chiefs have mentioned multiple times over the past couple of seasons. Like, he's a guy that we view as a starter. He is a guy that on any other team, he would step in immediately and be the guy. We saw him do that for them in the postseason. We saw him play through injury in the Super Bowl, and he was tremendous for the Chiefs. But at this point in his career, I don't blame him for wanting to seek out a bigger contract that guarantees him some playing time in the back half of his NFL career. And right now, there's a lot of teams in the NFL that have really bad offensive lines. So I think he can get a pretty decent sized contract as a talented guard.
Yeah, he was on the 4-year qualifying version of the veteran salary benefit contract in 2023, which pays him a couple million dollars, but only counts like $1.2 million against the cap. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it's something like that. And typically when the Chiefs give that kind of a contract to a player, they do it with a player that they've had on their roster for a little while from the draft or as an undrafted free agent. In fact, in order to be eligible for it, you have to be with the team for 4 straight years without a break. But usually those players are headed to free agency afterwards. And this is the Chiefs' way essentially to keep them on the squad for one more year and say thank you for the contributions they've made during those 4 years. Allegretti has been a very good contributor, considering that he was, what, like a 7th-round draft pick when he was taken from Illinois, I believe, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't that surprising that this would happen. And I loved this quote from him when he said that he was looking for a starting job. He said, "The best thing about football for me as an offensive lineman is the option and the availability to go lead a group of men. That's one of my favorite parts about football. And the best way to do that is to be a starter on day one. That's the opportunity I'm looking for." Well, I wish him luck. He's certainly deserved that chance.
And I think as we've seen from them from the Chiefs over the last several years too, like, if Allegretti is the type of guy and like the presence on the team in the locker room, like, where, you know, let's say he goes somewhere, signs a big contract, doesn't quite work out, winds up getting released or something, like, I wouldn't be shocked if he wound up back in Kansas City or something.
Right.
So
much like Austin Ryder, who's been on the team's practice squad for the last couple of years after he was gone for 1 year, if I remember correctly, after the first Super Bowl, and then came back and has been perfectly willing to continue to help the Chiefs on the practice squad every year.
Yeah. So we wish Nick Allegretti all the luck. Hope he lands a big contract. Hope he finds a starting role and finds success wherever he goes. If not, maybe he'll wind up back here in Kansas City. We'll know a little bit more once free agency officially opens. But, John, the Chiefs did officially place the franchise tag on Legarius Sneed. I believe it's, what, like $19.8 million guaranteed.
Right.
But I think the most up-to-date wrinkle of all of this is that, like, there's confirmation that he's got permission to go out and seek a trade and try to find a long-term deal, which wasn't necessarily stated from the get-go when it was first reported that they were going to place the franchise tag on.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. This is one of those circumstances where you could tell right away what the intention of the franchise tag was. Sometimes you can tell it's because they want to buy time to make a new contract with the player. But in this particular instance, because the team made it known that they had given him permission to seek a trade, because they didn't actually give him the franchise tag until Monday, and when they first announced they were going to do it, or let select we members of the media know so that they would report that they were going to do it is the way this typically goes. They were in the middle of the NFL combine and all the movers and shakers were in Indianapolis, gave everybody an opportunity to come to the Chiefs with what they would be willing to give and trade for Snead. And it looks like, you know, during the last week since this happened, there's quite a few teams that have lined up saying they'd be interested, at least 7 or 8 teams. We'll see how this plays out. I think that, let's see, the teams so far that we've heard about are the Colts, the Lions, the Falcons, the Vikings, the Patriots, the Titans, and Jaguars. You know, all of those teams could end up making a good deal for Snead. I think the Chiefs want or are looking for it. Second round pick. I think that would give them a lot of options in the draft. If they could get a second round pick for a guy they gave a fourth round pick to get 4 years ago, that's turned out very well.
And I was initially on the, I don't care what you do, like find a way to bring back Chris Jones and Legarius Snead train. And initially even like I'd bring back Snead, see what you can do with Jones. Like if not, like, can you try to move him or something? But the franchise tag number is so high. And it's like, you don't really want him to just hit free agency. But then like Chris Jones, the way he played in the postseason and his importance to the defense overall, like it's a bummer because I would like to see Legarius Snead back here because I think the Chiefs secondary has a chance to like go on this run here over the next couple of years with him and McDuffie where they could be really, really special. But it just kind of seems like with as open as they were about the trade, it just kind of seems like they're saying like, hey, we can't really keep him on the number he's looking for. Somebody give us a second round pick and we'll deal him to you. And I think Legarius Snead is a player who has only gotten better every single year that he's been in the NFL. He's the exact kind of player that I normally would say, like, you want to keep those guys around. Those are the guys you draft and develop. Those are the guys you want to pay. But just where the Chiefs are at right now and the way that they've developed corners, I just don't think that it's the best move for them to make by making him like one of the top 3 highest paid cornerbacks in football or something.
Right. And I think that you just hit on one of the primary pieces of this for the Chiefs is that they've got so many talented secondary players on the roster already. I think they will be able to skim over this loss of Snead pretty easily. You know, Nick Jones didn't play at all in 2023, and he was a guy that was really turning heads before he was injured. And I think that we might be surprised at where he ends up playing this year. And of course, he's not the only player. You know, we're talking about Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams and Chimere Connor, whom the Chiefs like a whole lot. It's not like they don't have some players you can step in and play after Snead is gone.
And I think people dramatically underestimated, too, how good Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams were last season.
Right.
Because of how exceptional McDuffie and Snead were all year. But
right.
those are second year players who came in the same draft class as Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams, who both took big steps forward in their development in year number 2. So with the way that they've coached up secondary, I would have to imagine that they're like, yeah, we can get more out of them in larger roles next season. It just sucks to see a lockdown corner like Legarius Snead go somewhere else, but kind of seems like that's the direction we're headed in at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah. Now, plus there were 8 other players who were tagged. We had a transition tag this year. The New England Patriots put a transition tag on their safety Kyle Duggar, but there were 7 other players who got non-exclusive franchise tags. We'll get to a couple of those in a minute when we're talking about some other things.
Yeah. And according to multiple reports, though, assuming at some point that a Legarius Snead trade comes down or he winds up playing on the franchise tag, part of that is because the Chiefs are in negotiations with Chris Jones on some kind of extension. Now, I don't think any of us are thrilled that we're a year removed from the last one and this is still an ongoing thing. And now it's affecting decisions this offseason off of another Super Bowl win. But like I already mentioned, like, Chris Jones is just one of those guys, and there's not very many of them, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that I think are just irreplaceable. And it just feels like he's the irreplaceable piece of this defense. So I hope they get a long-term deal worked out. I really hope this thing doesn't drag on anymore and they get something worked out. But with the way things are playing out right now, if they don't come to a deal before free agency opens, Chris Jones could technically hit the market and see what else is out there.
Yeah, he certainly could. I think that the Chiefs' decision to bring in Charles Omenihu for a 2-year deal when they knew he was going to miss the first 6 games of last season when they signed him was with this situation in mind, that they might be short on a player like Jones or Omenihu who can play both inside and outside and be a disruptive force on the defensive line. So I think that part of the problem here is that Omenihu may not play until late in the 2024 season after, you know, being injured during the postseason. That's a terrible time to get injured in the NFL because, you know, there's always a good chance with a significant injury that you won't even be back to for the beginning of the season, and that looks like that'll be the case with Omenihu. So I think this isn't exactly how the Chiefs wanted this to play out. I think they wanted more options than they have now. And with Omenihu out and the possibility of Jones not being available, man, that's a big chunk of the playmakers on your defensive line who won't be available at the beginning of the season. So I think this is a circumstance where the Chiefs have a lot less leverage than they thought they would, and Jones now has more. That's not good in terms of the salary cap, but you know, if they can trade Snead away and make a couple of little moves to make a little more cap space, they could still make a deal happen with Jones. And honestly, I think that's what's going to happen this time. I think Jones has, if I were in his position, I would certainly think that last year was the last time I'd ever want to go through something like that again. I don't think he wanted to do it that way. And I think after, you know, the first game or two, they're like, oh yeah, we need to get out. Yeah, this, we got to stop this. And they ended up, doing something that it ultimately cost him money. You know, he had to get all of those incentives to get all of the money back that he lost in fines, and he didn't make all of them. Got a lot of them, but not all of them. So I think that he's motivated to make this thing happen, and I think the Chiefs are too.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It feels like that's the direction that it's moving in, but I guess if Chiefs fans want to you know, be optimistic that, like, at least if they don't get a deal done, like, at least we're not going to have to wait around all summer this time.
Yeah.
And hope that something gets worked out and then get to week one and Chris Jones is sitting in a box. And so,
yeah. Yeah. That was crazy. That was completely crazy.
And you mentioned Charles Omenihu, and I totally agree with you on that. I think that that's a really brutal injury because I think, too, with ACLs and how difficult it is to come back from them and like have your full explosiveness and power and all that. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it's like halfway through next season before the Chiefs feel like Charles Omenihu is like close to what he was in the playoffs this past year. So that's definitely a bummer, but he's under contract for next season. So hopefully he gets back and is healthy and is another big part of the Chiefs defense. This is something that is kind of been coming out in the past week, and John, you'll have to give me a little bit on this because I have totally just kicked this to the side. Like, I don't care about kickoffs and I don't care about the rule changes, but there's reportedly some discussion from the NFL about updating the kickoffs. As we know, they're basically non-existent anymore. Like, the opportunity to actually return a kickoff in the NFL and make a play that way. I used to think that kickoff returns were like one of the most exciting plays in all of football, and they just don't really happen anymore because they don't have the opportunity to. So the XFL's got a more dynamic, more interesting approach, and reportedly the NFL is looking into some other options here.
Well, they're looking at something that looks very much like what the XFL does. The plan is, as I understand it, and I think that exactly the proposal that will be presented to the owners to vote on in the league meetings at the end of the month may end up being slightly different than this. But as I understand it, the kicker will continue to kick from his own 35-yard line, but his blockers will be on the opponent's 40-yard line. Theirs will be on their 35-yard line, that is 5 yards apart. and they can't move until the ball is either fielded or touched by a player, is the way it's been described, or the ball crosses the 20-yard line. So essentially, they can't move until the ball is fielded. And if the ball goes into the end zone, it's placed, it's a touchback that starts at the 35. If the ball hits the ground between the 20 and the goal line and rolls into the end zone, it's a touchback that goes to the 20-yard line. So this is all designed to keep players from running 40 yards downfield before they make contact with somebody at full speed, which will continue to make the play safer. I mean, there's all the problems they've had with kickoffs. They have been safer in recent years with the changes that they've made. So this is will keep the play fairly safe, but it'll open up the opportunity for returns. Nobody is going to want a kickoff to end up with a touchback at the 35-yard line. And I think that NFL kickers will show us how good they are at dropping it in that zone between the goal line and the 20, so that that doesn't happen. I expect that that 35-yard spot is going to be something that only rarely happens in a game. And the end result is going to be we're going to see more returns, and I think there's going to be more opportunity for returns that go some distance because of the way it's going to be lined up. I personally like it. It's funny because I'm an old guy, and I've been told before that I don't like change, and which is, you know, pretty normal for old guys like me. But I guess my problem is that I've been bummed by the loss of an exciting play for the kickoff, and I think this is one way they can do it while still maintaining the safety standard for the league. I get why people are mad, because it's just, you know, they're continuing to mess with it, continuing to change it. But, you know, we live in a world where we're not going to just let players get hurt and get to be in their 40s and discover that they have CTE or some other injury that they didn't know about when they were playing. And I think it's good that the league cares about that now, and that they're doing things to, within reason, make the game safer. And I applaud any effort to bring the kickoff into something that could actually end up being an exciting play.
Yeah, I think the most important thing here is, yes, making the game safer and trying to keep guys healthy and on the field and making sure that you can try to minimize the long-term consequences of playing the game of football. And in an attempt to do that, they basically just made the kickoff a meaningless play for the most part. So I'm all on board with improving it in some way. Everything that you explained to me there, I'm totally on board with that. That sounds fun and interesting. Also, like, NFL officials kind of suck. Sometimes the players really suck at knowing the rules. So I feel like there could be all kinds of issues. But
yeah,
I'm fine with them changing it. So we'll see how that goes. You know, I'm sure there'll be a couple other rule changes and things like
and,
that.
And who knows? Maybe it won't pass. You know, they need 24 votes from the owners to get it through. And sometimes we go into these things thinking a rule is going to pass, and then it doesn't, because you know, they only get 22 votes, or you know, they get 12 or something, and you know, there's not nearly as much support for it as we imagine. So we're still a little ways away from this actually being a rule. It's just something that the competition committee and a group of special teams coaches, I think, which is a significant part of it, have been trying to put together. We'll see what happens when the owners vote on it at the end of the month.
And I think the owners are kind of like you, John. I don't think they like change very much. I don't think that's why it's so hard to get anything done at these own meetings half the time.
Yeah.
Final thing before we take a quick time out, Tyreek Hill, was it the Pivot podcast?
Yes, John, I think, it was
joined out with Ryan Clark and those guys. But he was kind of asked about his comments from last season, like about Tua and Mahomes. And he went on to elaborate a little bit more than he had, just, you know, about Tua's growth and his step forward last season, which I totally agree with him. Like, Tua had a nice year. And then, you know, called Patrick Mahomes the best, and like, you know, and talked about a little bit about, you know, when he knew like he was the best and when that kind of turning point was. So I think there's some reflection in that for Tyreek Hill based on his comments after being traded from the Kansas City Chiefs and also seeing the Chiefs win back-to-back Super Bowls. Like, okay, like I'm getting paid a ton of money. I live in Miami. I've got this big life down there now and I'm still putting up crazy numbers in the NFL and I still am having a great time, but those guys are still winning rings and I'm down here in Miami getting, having to go to Kansas City in the playoffs and get destroyed.
Yeah, I think this is an indication of Hill continuing to mature, both as a player and as a person. When he made that comment about Tua being a more accurate passer than Patrick Mahomes, I think it upset a lot of people because that sounds like he's saying that Tua is a better quarterback. Well, he wasn't really saying that. He was saying that he was more accurate than Mahomes on the plays that he was making to him, Hill. And maybe there was something to that. And you could tell when he was asked this question in the interview that as soon as he, and he said Mahomes was the best quarterback in the league without hesitation. But you could tell that he said, was thinking, okay, I'm going to have to figure out some way to backtrack what I said about Tua. And then said, I said he was accurate and that was right. Mahomes is a strong arm guy. Tua was an accurate passer, but he has improved as a player. And then he looked back at an example. He gave an example of a time when the wide receiver group was and Travis Kelce were not playing well. And Mahomes took all of them aside and one by one chastised them for it pretty strong terms. And Hill respected that. And it made a difference in how they played at the very next game. And so I think what Hill is realizing here is that it's more than just a quarterback being good, which Mahomes has always been. We recognize that. But he's also been a great leader. And I think maybe Hill didn't really fully appreciate that when he was here with the Chiefs. And once he had gone someplace else and played for another NFL quarterback who maybe isn't such a good leader, and I think that Tua is certainly in that category, then he's, I think, come to appreciate Mahomes a little more than he did when he left.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's just about kind of maturity and like reflection and things. And like, you know, like what Mecole Hardman talked about with the Jets, like getting there, like just signing a big contract in free agency isn't always the best thing in the world. You're like, well, I'm getting paid, but the situation sucks. And, Tyreek's in a good situation in Miami and he's doing well there. But I also think he's like he's learning how to play the media game better too, because that was a big thing when he went to Miami. Like the Chiefs didn't really allow him to have off the field things and started doing all of that in Miami as soon as he got there and is obviously continuing to expand his name and brand outside of football and all of that stuff. So just quiet reflection from a former Chief and superstar wide receiver, Tyreek Hill. But that's the news. That's everything we had, but we're going to take a quick time out. When we get back, we will chat about some of our questions ahead of free agency opening next week across the NFL. That's coming up next.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. I am Steven Serta, filling in for Pete Sweeney, who's on vacation this week. the executive editor of arrowheadpride.com, John Dixon. John, we are a week away from the start of NFL free agency and really the tampering period. What's it open? I think on Monday, that's really kind of when it begins. Cause I feel like we always get the contracts and stuff and, oh, they have reportedly agreed to this and can't become right. official until league year starts on Wednesday, but really starts on Monday, but it'll be an influx of news Monday to Wednesday next week. So we got some questions that we want to discuss ahead of free agency beginning, cause it's going to be a wild week across the NFL. And we'll start on the odds of L'Jarius Sneed being traded before March 13th. Like, John, when the report initially came out, like they're going to franchise tag Sneed, but it took him a while to kind of get that going. And then the language comes out that like he can negotiate trades with teams mm-hmm. or whatever. Yeah. Like, how did that change your perspective on the tag situation for L'Jarius?
Well, you know, obviously it meant that that's what the Chiefs wanted, I thought, was to get a trade for Sneed. You know, going into it, I hadn't really thought too much about a trade. I thought that if they tagged Sneed, it was because they could afford the tag for Sneed better than they could what would be an enormous tag for Jones. But clearly the Chiefs want to get another draft pick or two to work with in the upcoming draft, because they do have a lot of holes they need to fill, despite coming off a Super Bowl win, and they could have an even bigger one with if Jones disappears. So I think that that's what they want, is to trade Sneed away, get that 20 million dollars back on the cap, and then be in a position to make a deal with Jones. So I think the odds, and plus we're having indications that there are multiple teams interested, and that's always what you want when your team is, you know, considering trading a player away. So I think the odds are pretty good that Sneed will be someplace else at least by next Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, they feel pretty high to me. When they put out there that like he's got the opportunity to negotiate a trade, and like that to me just kind of says that they're like, listen, you can take the franchise tag. We're not working on a long-term deal with you anymore. At least not this season. So if he winds up being a Chief this season, I think that's great for the defense if he winds up coming back on the franchise tag. But I would have to imagine he winds up getting traded at this point. So I think it's pretty high that winds up happening. And I do think that it's worth noting that, like, I feel like people think that franchise tag players getting traded on the franchise tag is a lot more common than it actually is. Like,
right.
Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to trade these franchise tag players because teams want to work out long-term deals. If they're willing to commit to a franchise tag player, then that contract extension usually has to be in place before they will actually make that deal, because the franchise tag is usually a huge number. And so I feel like people think that this is like a super common thing, and it doesn't actually happen that often in the NFL.
No, it really doesn't, because it is difficult to work all of that out. And you have to get the deal in place so the team knows that they can afford to do it. And then once they get that deal in place, which is a whole, you know, kettle of fish to worry about, then they have another kettle of fish to worry about, which is the compensation they're willing to give up in order to bring that player onto their team. So there's, you know, a couple of tough things you got to negotiate there. And typically there's not a whole lot of time to do it. And I think that what the Chiefs did by fairly early in the process anyway, I'm going to guess that there were teams that knew that Sneed was going to be on the block well before the time that we knew that they were going to put the franchise tag on him. But I think that it was good that they had the full scouting combine to have those meetings, you know, to go have backdoor meetings in restaurants and have those conversations face to face. I think that all makes those trades go a lot easier, I think. So that, you know, the Chiefs set up the right circumstances to make this work. And so I think this is something that we're going to see before Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, and it's just so many moving parts at this time mm-hmm, of the year.
Right.
You're trying to get information on guys that are going to wind up being available, trying to get a leg up in that stuff, trying to pay attention to draft prospects and the NFL combine and pro days and negotiate contracts. And, you know, they're reportedly deep in conversations with these Chris Jones negotiations and extensions. And so, like, there's just a lot of moving parts and a lot of different things to work through. And as Brett Veach has mentioned before, like, the Chiefs have contingency plans in place for, you know, different circumstances and what and how things play out. So we already talked about Chris Jones a little bit, but I mean, if they don't get an extension done with him before Wednesday, right, John, or if we don't get some news like on Monday, once the tampering period comes open, that, oh, the Chiefs have agreed to an extension with Chris Jones, like, there's a real chance he could wind up getting on the open market and fielding offers and saying, like, listen, I know I said at the Super Bowl parade that I'm staying here and I'm not going anywhere, but this team's offering me $34 million a year and you guys are only offering me 26. So I'm going to go take that paycheck.
Well, and, you know, you can't blame the guy for wanting to do that. You know, he's said all along that he wants to be a highly played player. And we've been through a couple of negotiations with him up to this point. Last year was pretty ugly. But, you know, I don't think he wants to play on the franchise tag. I think he wants to stay in Kansas City, but it's got to be at the right money, as it has to be for all of these players in these circumstances. So I think everybody wants to get it done, but whether they can get it done, that's another question. You know, as we discussed before, the Chiefs probably need Jones back more than they thought they would. And I think that means they want to get a deal done. But I also think that, as I have said many times over the years, the Chiefs don't have as much room to play with large contracts for players anymore. Now that Mahomes has such a big contract for over, you know, a period of many years. So this is another case where the Chiefs are trying to move towards building most of their team through the draft. And they just can't really afford to put out too many of these big contracts. And that's the pressure that's coming in from the other direction. So we'll just have to see how it goes. I think we'll get, you know, over the weekend, I think we'll start hearing whether there's real movement there and that we could expect to see a deal made before Wednesday.
Yeah, I want to say that I believe that it's high, that they'll get a deal done before then.
Yeah.
But I also feel like they thought that last offseason. I feel like they thought at one point that they would get an extension done with Tyreek Hill. And like this is just, you know, three seasons in a row now where the Chiefs could potentially go into the start of free agency kind of being handcuffed if they can't get something done. And I would have to imagine that they've learned from that experience and they're kind of telling themselves, like, well, we can't have all this over here if he's not going to agree to it. And he's going to hold us up looking at other guys and looking at our other options out there. So I believe that by Wednesday, we will know whether or not Chris Jones is going to be a Chief next season.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
I don't know if I am super confident that they're going to have a long-term extension in place at this point, just based on how things have gone the last couple of years with these guys.
I think that's fair. I think we'll have a much better idea by Tuesday, certainly by Wednesday, whether it's, I mean, it's possible that the possibility he could come back to the Chiefs might go for another couple of weeks, but I think we'll know by Wednesday whether he's really serious about getting offers from other teams. That's the thing that's going to be different about this that wasn't true last year.
Yeah. And it would be really interesting if this, you know, kind of drags out a little bit and he waits to kind of see what the market is here.
Yeah.
Typically the top of the market players, the guys that fly, and then you kind of, the Chiefs come in on the back end of that and sign their Drew Tranquils and guys like that.
Yeah.
Obviously we'll keep an eye on that. We'll have everything you need to know about Chris Jones and hopefully a long-term extension with the Kansas City Chiefs at arrowheadpride.com. Also high on the list of priorities for the Chiefs this offseason is the wide receiver position. And a lot's been made by Chiefs fans about this free agent group of wide receivers. And obviously we hope the Chiefs draft a wide receiver position. I think it's pretty obvious that they need depth there and they need to kind of figure out some positions like, you know, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore haven't exactly worked out. We already know that they moved on from Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Like, it's obviously a position of need, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers managed to work out a very team-friendly two-year, $52 million contract for Mike Evans. It's really like $41 million, $11 million in incentives for the veteran wide receiver, who I think it's pretty obvious that Evans just didn't want to leave Tampa at this point in his career. Where he's drafted, it's where he's played his entire career. He's been incredible there. T. Higgins, franchise tag by the Cincinnati Bengals. Michael Pittman, franchise tag by the Indianapolis Colts. The Michael Pittman thing is getting a lot of buzz, like, because the Colts are reportedly interested in L'Jarius Sneed, and they're like, oh, Michael Pittman for Sneed. But as I already mentioned, John, like, why would you trade one franchise tag player for another franchise tag player? Right. And knowing you have to figure out a long-term extension, like, I don't think anybody's got the time for that. I think there is a 0% chance that the Chiefs try to move Sneed for Michael Pittman, or that the Colts are even interested in doing that.
But that does bring up an interesting possibility, because we always talk about these trades, these tag and trade scenarios, as if all you're going to get back is draft picks. And of course, it's always possible they could get a player. The Chiefs might end up with getting a player and perhaps a later pick in the draft or something like that. I've even seen people suggest that teams might do a pick swap in the first round with the Chiefs so they could move from 32 to someplace further up to the top where they could get a better player, and maybe then some other later picks thrown in to make it all equalize out on the value charts. So yeah, that's a possibility. Those are always more interesting because you don't really know what a player is worth when they're drafted. You know, with draft picks, we can do all the things with the draft value charts and say, oh, well, this team got the better deal, and it's much easier to figure all that stuff out. But when you've got a player in there that a team is willing to give up, they may not be as good a value as you think, but some, you know, it always works out that one team wins and one team loses. It's just when there's a player involved, you don't know who it is for a while. And so there'll be that uncertainty if it ends up playing out that way, but it'll be very interesting to see if it does.
And especially when we're talking about like high end draft picks, there's always going to be somebody in the building that's like, yeah, but if we get him with our staff, we can turn him. We can right. do this with him. Like right. we can develop him in a way that they couldn't because they don't know what they're doing or whatever. And you know, like Michael Pittman, I think Michael Pittman is a fine player. I think Michael Pittman does very similar things to Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. I don't think right. they need another guy who does the exact same thing of the players that they already have on board. Which brings us to another wide receiver in Calvin Ridley, who the Jaguars did not franchise tag him. He is reportedly set to hit the free agent market, though Jacksonville is reportedly still very interested in trying to bring him back on a long-term deal of some kind. But he's another player that could be available out there. I think Calvin Ridley is kind of a similar thing where it's like, I don't know how different he is from what they already have. I think they really need speed, which is like why a Marquise Brown, I think, is going to be more cost effective and a little bit more interesting to me to go along with, you know, drafting another wide receiver or two in the upcoming draft class. But Calvin Ridley is also going to be 30 years old, which is crazy, John, because of his suspension and the way all that stuff worked out. Like, it's going to be 30 years old, and this is the first time he's getting to negotiate a second contract for himself. So I'd have to imagine he's going to try to get as close to, you know, top of the market value as he can. And I just feel like he's going to wind up getting priced out of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You know, going back to what I was saying before, the Chiefs just are not going to be big players in the free agent market, I think, unless they have no choice. And there's been a couple of times in the last couple of years since Mahomes was signed to his contract that they really haven't had a lot of choice. They've had to make a big free agent move, spend a lot of money. And I think they're trying to avoid that when they can. And I think that in the case of wide receivers, that's a place where they just don't want to put out that big money. And I think last year they showed that that was the right move. I mean, yes, some of those big players like OBJ, you know, did okay, but did they do the kind of productions that would have been justified the huge contracts that were paid for these guys? I don't think so. And the Chiefs ended up winning the Super Bowl anyway. I mean, you know, I know the wide receiver group didn't turn a lot of heads last year, but the result of the season certainly did. And I'm not certainly going to say, I'm certainly not saying the Chiefs don't need to go out and get some better players as wide receivers. I think we'd all want the position group to do better than it did last year, because it just gives the Chiefs better opportunities to win games. But, you know, the idea that they might drop a $20 million per year contract on a wide receiver just seems crazy to me. I just don't think that that's what's going to happen. I don't think you're going to see a player like Calvin Ridley end up in Kansas City, especially not at 30 years old.
Yeah, I don't see it happening either. And really just kind of my final thoughts before we get out of here, head of free agency next week. I think for me, it's number one priority, make sure a Chris Jones extension is agreed to.
Yeah.
After that, I think it is value. Like, whether that's, you know, maybe you can get a team friendly deal to bring Drew Tranquil back. I think that is a big move that the Chiefs should absolutely make if they can make it happen. And then I think at the wide receiver position, I think it's, you know, I don't know what the future holds for Kadarius Toney. Sky Moore is going to be around next season, and building. I think we both probably agree that that's definitive. I think after that, I think it's kind of what it was last year. It's like cost effective, penny pinching wide receivers, where find veteran guys who can just try to use as complementary pieces, and then go attack it in the draft, because everybody's hyping this up as the greatest wide receiver draft class of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go take a couple of stabs there, keep them cheap, develop them like you did Rashee Rice. And I just feel like that's the best path moving forward.
Well, I think that the thing that we learn over and over about Brett Veach in each of these drafts is he likes to go into the draft with his biggest holes covered somehow. Yeah. Maybe not with the player he wants, but I think he wants to go into draft day with a roster he could go start a game with tomorrow if he had to. The key word being had to. And so I think that what we're going to see from the Chiefs in free agency isn't a lot of splashy news for name players. They're going to be looking, as they always do, for players that can play roles for the team, fill the holes in some way, shape, or form, so that the Chiefs can just pick the best players that are available within their quiver full of needs. At each pick of the draft, because that's what gives them the greatest value over time. And let's not forget that also something that has to happen before Wednesday afternoon is the Chiefs have to make decisions about their exclusive rights free agents and their restricted free agents. Now, I don't know whether they're going to keep Jody Fortson or not, but he's one of those restricted free agents. So is Prince Tegu-Onogo, who has not been an offensive lineman who's played a lot of games for the Chiefs, but he's played well and they've spent some time developing him. Yeah. And I think they want to keep him if there's a way to do that. And then there's four exclusive rights free agents, three of whom were stalwart special teams players last year. Mike Caliendo, an offensive lineman, and two linebackers, Cole Christensen and Jack Cochran, and then safety Nazi Johnson, who spent last year on injured reserve, if I'm not mistaken. Those guys are all exclusive rights free agents. Now, they only have to have a minimum contract offered to them. But, you know, these things add up to a significant amount of cap space when you've made all these moves. So these also have to be made before the Chiefs get to the first day of the league year on Wednesday afternoon. So I know everybody wants to see some big moves, and maybe there will be a somewhat big move or two. But I think mostly what we're going to see is Brett Veach trying to hit some singles and some doubles and start giving his team an opportunity to hit a sacrifice fly and score.
Yeah. And I just don't think it can be overlooked how tremendous the Chiefs have been at drafting the last two seasons, especially finding guys outside of day one. Like,
agreed.
It's hard to live like that in the NFL, and it can be a crapshoot, but it's pretty clear that the Chiefs have a formula, and the formula is working right now. So just got to hope that you can hit on some of those guys again in the NFL draft, because that is the best way to continue to build. And the Chiefs have done a tremendous job of it over the last few years. So I've got faith, at least in the scouting department, and we'll have everything you need to know at arrowheadpride.com as free agency begins next week. And got you covered, all things NFL draft right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, as well as arrowheadpride.com. He's John Dixon. I'm Steven Serta. We'll be back on Friday with the latest edition of the AP Draft Room. We will talk to you guys then.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10, by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.